Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
Hello everyone, pleasure to have you with us on this Monday morning, bleary-eyed record of Under the Abbey Stand. But we've all got the caffeine injection of 3 points to keep us going. And crucially, at any point along this podcast, we can stop at some services for a Costa, a Burger King, and maybe a big cuddle from Sam Smith. Joining me this week to discuss another 3 points added to the board. First off, Jordan Warland. Jord, have you enjoyed your weekend, basking in the glory of our first away win?
I've had a lovely weekend, thank you, Julian. Watching with the Frankfurt Ewes was a most pleasurable Saturday afternoon experience. Some interesting points in your intro there. You said bleary-eyed Monday morning. It's 20 past 11, mate.
Mate, for me, this
Caspel
is
and I have been up since. Caspel and I have been up since like the early hours of today.
Not together, just to point out.
Well, I had to walk home from yours, right? Awful walk of shame. And then the second thing about service stations, everyone knows the best service station has a KFC in it.
That's true. And also, you know, the biggest problem with my intro there is I've claimed that getting a Burger King is better than getting a Macca's or a KFC. And I remember me and you having a big argument about Burger King.
I will die on this sword that Burger King fries are much better than McDonald's. So
I'm just not sure you're right, mate.
Tweet us and I won't care, but you know.
I think it's got to be a Mackey's all day long, to be honest. But anyway, let's move on. The other voice you heard there was Matt Caspel. Matt, I've got a big question for you. I would be doing Tom Walker a disservice if I didn't ask you about Cole Stockton based on Saturday's performance. Based on that performance, that move to Real Madrid it's not quite working out for him, is it?
It's really turned his head, hasn't it? That's how we've written it here. Can you even describe Cole Stockton as a jobber, as Tom calls it, if he does absolutely no job whatsoever? So I'm not really sure what's going on. I think we covered last week, he probably doesn't listen to the pod.
Probably.
The only thing I can think is he's obviously cut his hair. He's cut his hair short, so it could be one of those.
Maybe that's it.
He's lost his powers. He did try one, didn't he, in the first half? But he blasted it miles over the bar. Just not really. Yeah.
Anyone else watching online, was you just a bit weirded out that Dave Salmon was the commentator, the guy that was on our pod last week from Morecambe? I just spent the whole 90 minutes thinking, how's he got this job? And and when are one of you tasks going to be offered the gig of commentating on Cambridge games?
Well that was going to be my next question.
Because Matt Ramsey now commentates on Borough games.
Well, he's off Gabby Zakuani. Yeah.
Matt Ramsey, he's off the list.
Who is 100% listening to this and will no longer be taking any future part. And he has taken himself off the list of friend of the pod in one sweeping move. Anyway, let's move on. Speaking of friends of the pod, let's start with some positives.
Before we move on, really important question. Where the hell is Tom Walker? This is a podcast. This is a podcast. There's no Tom Walker.
It's weird. I know. It's strange. It's like there's this weird, empty sort of vacuum in the Zoom. Like, there's no hot takes.
Is he still alive? Listeners are going to be listening in, worried that he might be still in Italy or worse. You can confirm that he made it back. He's all right.
I can confirm he made it back. You know, a bit of a shell of a man on Saturday afternoon. We watched the game together. But I think the international duty just sort of took his toll on him. So I think he just needed a weekend off.
I have a follow-up question as well, Julian.
Please.
Is Tom Walker not being on the pod a platform to away wins?
Oh, I'll tell you what, it could be, couldn't it?
And who's on the pod the weekend of the Borough game?
Definitely not Tom now.
You might want to change that rota.
No, George, we've already spoken about this. It's me, you, Barry Fry.
I'd love to chat to Barry Fry for this pod.
Yeah, look, I mean, we can try and make that happen. Anyway, look, we must move on. We must move on to talking about the first away win of the season at Morecambe yesterday. As I was saying, friend of the pod, Bruno Bez, has got in touch with this question. 10 out of 16 points from losing positions so far this year. Should we just start 1-0 down? A bit of context to this. Matt Gooding, a friend of the pod, you know, not Matt Ramsey, Matt Gooding, has done the digging into this for us. In 21-22, we gained 5 points from losing positions out of 46 games. So far this year, 10 games in, we've gained 10 points from losing positions already. Jord, I'll throw it to you. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I like that you said we should get on with this because we are recording while some of us are meant to be at work. So I feel a bit naughty doing this pod. I'm pretty sure no one from where I work listens to the pod, apart from one guy who isn't in my team, so won't grasp on me. Hiya, Paul, by the way.
Paul Barry.
I wish, mate. Should we start 1-0 down every game? Interesting point. Maybe this season, but I don't think it would work very well next season when we're in the championship. So maybe it's a short-term thing. Got to touch on the excellent Sunday stats that Matt Gooding put on Twitter. I thought that was brilliant. He didn't do it for us. He just did it for himself, sat around at home on a Sunday looking at stats. But yeah, 5 points gained from losing positions over the whole of last season versus, 10 already this season when it's only been 10 games. I think you can only describe that in one word, and that is resilience. You know, the team is growing and adapting. It's more resilient than it was last year, and that's a beautiful sight to behold. We're growing into the league. We're adapting. It shows that those fears of being found out or second season syndrome aren't necessarily occurring yet, or might not occur at all, or won't be as foregone a conclusion as some of us were worried about. So it's brilliant. Lots and lots of positives. So feel bad mentioning a pessimistic response. And I think Matt also tweeted about this, but I think last season we only lost once from a winning position, whereas we've already done it twice this season. So that's a bit of a sad one. Brilliant to see that we are able to still be competitive in games after falling behind, because it just feel like it was a monkey on our back, and it did feel last season that games were done, you know, the moment we were behind. So great to see that the team is maturing and being able to deal with this scenario.
Yeah, maybe there's something in that, like the sort of a bit more self-belief in the squad, a bit more like we deserve to be at this level, that sort of general feeling around the squad. Touching on yesterday's game specifically, Caspel, it sort of feels right to start with Bonner's subs, which is, you know, not a topic on this pod, a regular topic on this pod for probably the wrong reasons at times, let's say, or maybe, you know, a point of discussion, shall we say, when he leaves subs very late. That's not what he did on Saturday. The second goal, I realised just watching the highlights back, was actually really well worked. And apart from Digby, it was created entirely by subs, Okunibere to Nibs. Nibs does incredibly well, gets fouled, great advantage by the ref, and then gets himself up. Gets himself into the box and gets on the end of Tracy's pullback. Caspel, what are your thoughts? Bonus subs. Should we give the man some praise? We've had this question from Richard, if it helps you contextualize it a bit. How much of yesterday's excellent performance was down to Bonner's personnel / tactical changes, or Morecambe not being very good?
Right, a lot to unpack. Absolutely, they deserve credit for the subs. Had a huge influence on the game. Really interesting game, obviously. First half, I mean, made quite a few changes. First half, we started like an express train, to be honest. It was complete disbelief when they scored, because it felt like they hadn't actually even crossed the halfway line, Morecambe, and suddenly they'd scored. I think the way we set up was pretty much ideal for the game. It's great to see some guys coming into the squad and taking their opportunity really well. So Lancaster, fantastic performance. Rossi, I thought, looked really assured, really comfortable. But you have to caveat that with the point that Morecambe were not up to much. I'm pretty sure now that we've played Burton and Morecambe, I'm very confident that Morecambe will finish bottom of the league. I can't see any other outcome for them. I think they were a mile off, to be honest. It was an interesting thing. But yeah, no, great to see the subs getting involved. Great to see subs made proactively. And just always nice. Score a late winner is just always a really good thing. Reward everyone who made the long journey up either from Milan or just from, you know, from the south of England is a long way to go. So great to see that. Obviously, I think subs at some point in the future will rear its head again as an agenda point. I'm sure it will. But yeah, just really, really good to see.
Should we not praise Bonner for his subs just whilst that Rotherham job is still like vacant? You know, maybe we shouldn't make too much noise about, you know, how he got his in-game management right this weekend and stuff.
I think it's pure luck. He realized that he'd set up wrong from the start, maybe. Let's spin it that way around.
Yeah,
he got it wrong.
That's it, he got it wrong and he had to change stuff.
He had to panic and change stuff and he's just throwing forwards on by the end. Let's go with that. Yeah.
It was all Waddock's doing, right?
That's it. Yeah. God. To be fair, I think from a research perspective, obviously I'm not...
A big research.
We don't... No, we don't do it, but other people, I think, I'm led to believe other people do, including the coaching staff. But I'm getting into this XG thing now. I'm starting to really vibe on it. But I think they've done the work and they know that XG, expected goals, for anyone who's not down with the lingo, that you are much more likely, according to the stats, to score a goal in the last 15 minutes of games than you are at any other point. So there is a logic to being in games. We've kind of known this in old sort of football parlance anyway, like stay in the game, be in the game on 70 minutes. But the data does kind of kick that through. And the fact that we've assembled the squad we've got this year, we've got people like Akenabire, we've got Jane, got sometimes Tracy, depends who's started and who's coming off the bench, but we've got real threats on the bench.
Yeah,
can't remember us for a long time having this much sort of oomph and power on the bench to come on and turn games around. So if we can get ourselves into those positions, even if you think the opposition not the strongest, just be in the games on 70 minutes, then I think not only is it great for us as fans because it means maybe we'll score some late goals, but it's just really exciting to know that we've got options always to come off the bench. So really good to see.
I was gonna say something similar actually, because on the subject of Bonner subs, it's very rare that he changes the setup or the formation. Like, he has done it a couple of times this season and gone to a flat four, but for the most part when he does subs this year and last year, it's keeping the same shape. So what's really great to see this season is exactly what Matt's just said there, like the strength and depth, because we've got people that can come on and offer not just a fresh role in that position, but also they do the position slightly differently. You know, Tracy out on the left does it differently to, say, Brophy, who replaced, and, you know, and Okunibere out wide does it differently to the rest of them as well. And obviously Nibs is a very different 10 to Lancaster. So it's great to have, you know, options within sort of like for like replacements, but also options within the shape, which is, that front four, it seems really exciting. You know, possibly, you know, not been this exciting since, you know, like the front three involving Kitson and people like that, you know, having these different options to sort of swap in and out. But yeah, Okunibere, well, great find he's looking to be as well.
Yeah. Really shown. So, I mean, I didn't watch the Tuesday game because I'm not a complete
star. I was going to check. Are we allowed to mention a lovely goal in the Pizza Trophy?
Well, that's where we're missing Tom, really, because he's the sort of roving reporter for the Pizza Trophy games. Let's just stick on this for a second, though, because we had a question in from Ryan about this sort of depth. Well, I'll skip ahead to it just now while we're on it. He's asked, is it better to have the same settled 11 each game, or should we be changing the lineup week to week based on the opposition, given that we have more depth this season and need to keep more senior players happy than in previous years? I think we sort of already touched on it. Jord, let's just go back to what you were saying. Let's take the Nibs and Lancaster, the different options we have there as 10s. They're such different, different options in how they play that role. Do you think that that's maybe the biggest quality of this season, that when we need to be little old Cambridge, probably, you know, we'll come onto the Derby game this weekend, that's probably where you want Nibs, harrying and pressing and playing a bit more on the break. When you want to take control of a game, like Morecambe away, or I thought that Lancaster should have also started at Cheltenham. Me and Casper, we had a conversation about this at the time, where we want to take a bit more possession of the ball. You want to carve out chances where, you know, teams are going to be sitting a little bit deeper against us. You've got this other option in a 10 in Lancaster. Does that sort of show the sort of depth and the different ways of playing we have this year, George, to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've hit the nail very firmly on the head there. On the squad as a whole, but in the number 10 position, I thought the use of the tens on Saturday was spot on. I thought for a lot of the game, we needed a Lancaster type role, someone who wanted the ball, someone who was able to move it and use it and get us forward, because we were going to have that time and we were going to need to have to break Morecambe down. And then the nibbler in my eyes was needed for that final phase of the game for, you know, for the reasons that you just said, his mobility, his chasing of players down. And, you know, his role in the goal, by the way, was sensational, because not only did he finish it, he saved what was a terrible pass from Adam May. If you watch the highlights back, it was a really shit pass from Adam May that he somehow manages to get to, draws a foul. Like you said earlier, the ref plays the advantage and we go up the other end and score. So I think the mix of the two tens was spot on, and I would like to see us switch between the two for the rest of the season. Answering, you know, Ryan's question, yeah, I would do it based on looking on who the opposition is. So if you look at October, you know, we've got some away games on big pitches and things like that. So I think Nibbler would have the better business case for starting those. We then have games against people like Port Vale and Bristol Rovers where we're going to be targeting points and we'll have a lot more of the ball. So I'd bring Lancaster into those. The only time that I'm not sure is the home games against the sort of bigger, better teams, as you were. Didn't quite feel like the Nibbler worked at home to Barnsley. I mean, that's a bit harsh because no one really came out of that game with much credit. So it'd be really interesting this Saturday coming, Derby County at home. Like, who do we start with? I would be tempted to see how Lancaster does in those kind of games, and see if maybe he might be of better use because we might have a little bit more of the ball. Whereas if, you know, rather than if we were playing away to Derby. So yeah, an interesting one ahead on Saturday, but yeah, the formation, the strength that we've got is terrific. Great to have two options at number 10. But I will sign off by saying I would take Houlihan back in a heartbeat, just because I can't fully praise someone that plays number 10 when, you know, Wes has my heart.
Especially with a number 14 shirt, right? It's never gonna.
It would do a disjustice to that chest tattoo that I've just got.
Is that the Scarface one? Yeah.
Yeah. But it's Wes.
Anyway, let's stay on this number 10 position for a second, because as expected, we got quite a few questions in specifically on Lancaster's standout performance. Casper, we had a few opposing views and queries. Let's take these two. So we've had from Liam, we had this question. Throughout the first 10 games, we saw the Ironside Nibs pivot more than anything else, and it was dropped after the Cheltenham loss. Is it time to bring that back? Lancaster did well yesterday and does deserve to be in rotation, but we need more ruthlessness going forward, he thinks. James asks, is this the game that really launches Jack Lancaster's career with us? He was excellent with the ball and worked hard off it, showing he can do the defensive side of the role as well. With October fixtures being very difficult, do we need a player that can see a killer ball that others can't? Casper, what's your take on Lancaster? I know George touched on the depth there, but specifically Lancaster's performance yesterday and, you know, what he can give to the side going forward.
So he was outstanding against Morecambe. There's no doubt about that. I think the concern with Lancaster that people might have is, I guess he's regarded as a very attacking player, and that if you play him in that role, he's not going to give you any kind of cover and it could leave you a bit exposed. But to be honest, I think against Morecambe, he took it with a lot of responsibility. So he actually did start quite deep and look to make play from, you know, quite deep on the pitch, which maybe people weren't quite expecting. He's taken the goal so well. The goal deserves its own chapter of chat, definitely. First of all, it's an amazing move.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I was just about to say. Yeah, really well worked.
It's just a really well worked goal. Like
another dunk assist.
Another dunk assist.
It was a dunk assist. He's picked him out well, is the thing. Yeah. It's really nice. Like,
what a finish, though.
And a bit of Brophy in there as well.
It's just a class finish. Just side footed in the bottom corner. Really just stylish goal. Really well taken. Really composed. And that's great to see. Obviously, I mean, hopefully that continues for him. Should we bring the Ironside Nibs pivot back? I think George's probably covered it in the main. I think there's times and places where that's probably a lot more appropriate. And we've got quite a few of those in October. Quite a few sort of interesting challenges for us coming that month. I think we just need to be fluid with this. I would go to the point that I said last time on the pod that there's actually a world where I think Lancaster could start slightly deeper on the pitch in the role that May plays. And there could be a world where you can actually start Lancaster and Nibs together with Nibs in the hole doing the press. And that might be something interesting to explore in one of these home games where away from home, we know we feel like we probably want Ironside Nibs. Maybe home games against some of the, you know, the clubs who are similar size to us, you maybe want just pure creativity. So you're going to go with Lancaster. Is there a halfway house where you start Lancaster a bit deeper and rotate that way around? I don't see why we can't be open-minded to something like that. So in terms of showing more ruthlessness, we've scored a ton of goals. We're like one of the top goal scoring teams in League One. I think that's coming at a cost of we're obviously conceding more than we'd like. And I said it again, I've said it a couple of times this season. We are not going to draw very many games, I don't think. We have set up slightly differently this season where we're going to try and attack and win games. And we've accepted, I think, that we're going to lose a few in amongst that, if that makes sense. I think it's only Peterborough who have not drawn any games at all. And we've drawn one, which sets us up nicely for the end of October. I don't think we can be too rigid with what we do with formations and with playing staff. I think it's just great to have this strength in the squad that we have. And it's nice to see lots of players having an influence on our season.
Yeah, absolutely. And another player that I think deserves some credit jumping in for his league debut, unless I'm wrong, on Saturday is a big, tall, rangy centre-half, Zeno Ibsen-Rossi. George, what did you make of his performance and his first game his first league game, sorry, for the club?
You mentioned his appearance. It's quite funny. He doesn't look like a footballer. If you saw him walk down the street, I don't think you'd point him out as being a centre-half. But
he looks like our friend Josh Parker is what he actually looks like, who is not a footballer, so you're right.
I think Rossi did really well on Saturday. I think there's a couple of caveats there. Like, number one, obviously he is young, and just like with Okadina and a few others, you need to sort of protect those younger players and not put too much on them too early around expectations and performances. He was, you know, obviously helped by the fact that big Cole the goal was on the bench. So he had a good sort of relatively easy first half. I guess the other thing is, it's if with both Rossi and Lancaster, when they're not, you know, we saw it last week, when they're not in the team, it's easy to just sort of jump to the conclusion that, you know, bring them in and it will make the difference. So there's a lot of pressure on there, I guess, on those kind of players that I think we need to be wary of. But in general, I thought Rossi had a fantastic game on Saturday. Maybe it was a nice sort of gentle way to ease into League One and ahead of a tough October. But I think he suits playing out from the back, which obviously we're favouring this year, and it is making us a bit more possession based. And, you know, I enjoyed sort of Lancaster wanting and showing for the ball as well as part of that kind of sort of possession setup. But I thought he had a really solid game, Rossi. I thought he kept things reassuringly simple at times. He didn't try to be too complicated and was just very efficient in what he did. And, you know, he didn't miss anything that I can remember, and he looked calm. And yeah, I look forward to seeing how his relationship with Jones develops, because they both seem to be players that like to bomb forward. There were points in the second half where Jones was sort of almost left wing at times, which was quite funny. It was great to just see both our centre backs being comfortable on the ball and bringing it out. And yeah, they seem to both be decent passers, which is crucial, because I think there is perhaps a gap missing in central midfield. You know, Matt, we were saying on Saturday in the second half, it did seem like there was a big old gap between sort of midfield and attack. And I know both May and Digby were involved in the second goal, but there were points in the second half where they were sort of, I don't know, seemed a bit sort of missing. So yeah, having sort of someone sat behind you that can step forward and bring the ball out is going to help when you have sort of instances like that in game.
Yeah, very much so. Interested to see if Rossi could play holding midfield, just as a complete side note that I've literally just considered.
I don't know, man.
Don't think.
I think look, with Rossi...
Look, Greg Taylor can do it, so surely Rossi can.
Can he? I like the look of Rossi, but he's just played an extremely poor Morecambe side, is what I would say.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm interested to see what would happen over a longer course of games. I think he's earned the right to do that. But
well, we'll probably see on Saturday, to be honest, playing against the front line that Derby have got available to them.
Yeah, it's a different kind of it's a different kind of test for us. On the centre midfield thing, it's interesting because a lot of people have, you know, some of the defensive issues we've had have been a problem. And the goal we conceded on Saturday is, without making things negative, it's really poor, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Play just seemed to break down. And I think midfield has a real big role in this because I know Brophy's he's dropped a complete clanger, to be honest. And then Mitov has perhaps been beaten too easy, I'll say on Tom's behalf because he's not here. He shouldn't be beaten that way. And I think he'll know that as well. And
I'll also point out that I think if you watch it back, May also loses his man that Brophy actually does really well to get into any position to challenge him for.
The problem started a bit higher up the pitch. Brophy absolutely could have done. He had options and he took them away from himself with his choices, if that makes sense. So he kind of boxed himself in and tied himself up in knots. And that was the problem. But again, I think that sort of comes back to midfield. It's, you know, there's not a single point of blame because obviously there's a few mistakes that have led to it. But again, it's one of those daft things you say where if you think we could be a playoff contending team, which we should entertain seriously, then that's the kind of stuff that we need to get a bit of a grip on. We need a bit more control in midfield. Even late on against Morecambe, when it was 1-1 before we scored, I felt like we didn't have enough control of the ball. It wasn't, we were pressing them a lot, but they were pressing us a lot as well. And I think we'd entered a bit of a weird territory where they could easily have scored, just like down at Cheltenham, just got a late goal. It did feel a bit risky the way we approached it. It wasn't like we were dominating, putting stuff together and pressing on them. So I don't know what the solution is. I know O'Neill is on the bench. I know the fact that we didn't sign a centre midfielder is sort of gaining a bit of traction, I think, as a viewpoint, sort of another centre midfielder in the mix. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see how they approach it next few weeks.
Some of us are still waiting for Simper to make 30 league appearances.
Just about to say, he's still got time, Jordan. 36 games left.
We're getting to the point where he's going to need to be sort of coming every week. Yeah,
every week. Well, there's enough time, boys. Don't worry about it. All right.
Matt made like a really good point there about the goal.
No, he did.
Well, no, just a good point for me to then bring up a whinge, which I'm sure you two want to join in with as well. But
here we go.
Oh, don't say it.
It's not a long throw, but it is, you know, it is a set piece related one. So look, Matt, you said that the goal, you know, problems started further up the pitch. It wasn't just Mitov being beaten weakly at his near post, who should have saved, and Brophy sort of losing the man. Like, I have some sympathy for Brophy, given that, you know, you're the last man. So it's a tough call to make, like sticking your foot in and making the challenge, because you get it wrong, you're pretty much just going to be sent off. But yeah, if I'm remembering the goal correctly, and do correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure that was a turnover from us having a set piece. I can't remember.
It was a free kick, I think, near the box.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was a free kick or a corner, but one of the standouts from Saturday, you know, praise, you know, further praise to Lancaster, like his deliveries were half decent, but there were others in set piece.
All about Jordan. Go on.
I lost count of how many times Adam May didn't beat the first man with either a free kick or a corner.
Jordan, it's getting beyond a joke though now. At this stage, he's in his own head about it. He must be. He's a professional footballer. He knows what a good corner. He knows that not beating the first man every time is bad. He must know that. Do you know what I mean? I think it's like, you know, when a cricketer gets the gyps or whatever, and they just cannot bowl it in a straight line. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I think for me, it's one of those where, I mean, we spoke about it a bit before. Obviously, we know that you want to hit dipping, curling, like in swing a ball. So you need to hit the top half of the ball technically to get it to dip. And that's hard. It's definitely a hard thing to do.
But he's clearly not capable of doing it though. I know, that's what I mean.
It has to happen. Like, if we had 13 corners in that game, like one of them's got to be really dangerous to justify continuing we had 10 corners in the first half. Like, one of them's got to look seriously threatening.
And when you've got the height of Jones, Ibsen Rossi, Ironside's physicality, Digby's a big lad. Like, we've got big players in there, and we never threaten from set pieces.
Well, this is also sort of what I think is like, I mean, I can almost relate. I've taken some corners of my time. It's like, if it's not going rolling back the years. If it's not going well, you sort of have a bit of a safe haven, which is like, just clip it up to the back post. Like, not a dangerous style of ball to put in the box, but like, you're sort of playing a bit of a percentage. Like, if I drift this to the back post, away from the keeper, outside the 6-yard box, I do have a Jones or a someone Like the game yet on Sunday, the Ipswich Plymouth game where the Ipswich's keeper nearly scored right at the end. It wasn't a dangerous corner. It just floated up. But the bloke's like 6 foot five or whatever. So he won the really good header, the keeper.
We were joking that like at this stage, right, the Morecambe defence was just giving away corners because they're like, but it just doesn't matter. It's just not going to be threatening. But if you do their research, like there's no point where you I've stopped celebrating winning a corner in the same way that I used to. You know, when you'd be like, yeah, come on, right corner, here we go. You just sort of go, right, yeah, corner, right, fuck it, right. That's that attack done. Yeah, yeah. Oh, brilliant.
At least we've got the long throws, though.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. We did, I'll just shout out Mark, who did ask, should we petition for Jack Lancaster to give Adam May some dead ball training?
I don't want this to get anti Adam May in that sense. What that says to me is that none of them are good at it. And May has been asked to do it because he's better than the others, which is a tragic indictment of a lot of other players.
Yeah. What I find genuinely confusing about it is Adam May is clearly a good footballer, right?
He was good on Saturday. I thought he had a good game.
I thought he was decent, right? He was involved a lot. He got himself on the ball a lot. What's he renowned for with us? It's scoring long-range goals, right? Where he hits the ball with like really good technique and power and accuracy. And he does that with like a moving ball when he's getting closed down, and he has the ability to do that from 25, 30 yards. Surely it's easier when the ball's still on the floor. Like, I don't... It's just confusing to me. And I think he must be in his own head about it a little bit. Anyway, let's move on. We've done very well moving on to onto some of the negatives there. Another negative that I think is worth talking about is actually an off-pitch situation. A situation with the fans. Bonner noted it in his post-match presser that he didn't like the song about winning away, which I think if anyone's not versed in it, goes, how shit.
Matt, sing for us.
We're winning away.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Go on.
Oh no! If Sherin comes back, I'll do it for sure.
I mean, I think everyone's well aware of what the song is. Boys, what's your take on this? I mean, you know, Bonner said he wasn't very happy with. He didn't like that song. He didn't seem angry about it. I think his point was pretty valid. Was like, you know, they work hard, very hard. It's very hard to win games of football away from home in this division. And I suppose maybe he considered it, I don't know, a little bit patronising or something. I don't think there's much in it. I think it's probably football fans just having a laugh. It was our first game of away win of the season.
Wait till Adam May hears us talk about corners. Like, if he wants patronising.
Where did we score from a
Matt
corner?
Matt Caspel for Kitstonians will show you how to do it.
Yeah. Well, go on, Caspel. What's your take on it as a situation?
It's a storm in a teacup, right? It's like Twitter is a bit of an echo chamber and there seems to be a lot going on there. I thought it was very smart of Bonds and Ian Mather and quite a few people to tweet out how much they appreciated the support, which they all did on Saturday, which I think was a bit of PR exercise on their part. I can get both sides of the story, really. I mean, I don't subscribe to this view that like, oh, I've travelled, you know, 300 miles and paid my money so I can do or say whatever I want, which seems to be one line of thought. On the sort of, you know, anyone who's traveled to Morecambe and gone all that way, sort of on the flip side, obviously deserves a bit of respect. It's a long journey. It's expensive. It's time consuming. It's all of those things. Some of the lads who've sort of emerged over the last 3, 4, 5 years watching United, you know, you can have your own opinion about them. But what I do know is they're really genuinely contributing to us having a really good atmosphere at some of these games. Like they are driving it along, which is kind of the role and the responsibility of teenagers and guys in their 20s, because it allows lets old duffers like me and Joe like retire in a way. Like I now feel this will sound a bit arrogant because I've been doing it 20 years, but I now feel like I don't have to sing songs for their to really like try and push along an atmosphere. And when I was 10 years ago, it was a bit harder. It would be like, if you weren't joining in, then atmospheres could run very flat. And those lads are doing a really good job. So you kind of have to acknowledge that they are like, they're turning up every week in good numbers, making really good noise. So I don't like the song. I think it is a bit patronizing. I think if it's good for Bonner to call it out, because it's clearly pissed one or more of the players off. I think that's where this has come from.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
And we all respect each other here. So players respect fans. We respect the players, and we should. They've earned a huge amount of credit. So hopefully it just draws a line under it. We don't get it again. And that's the end of it. You know, there's not going to be like any sort of ongoing problem, I wouldn't think. It will be interesting to see if someone tries to start it up at any point. But obviously everyone can exercise their own judgment in that point, right? Don't have to join in, but don't get offended by Bonds if he's reacting that way either, basically.
Look, I'll give you a hot take. Bonner is a Habonite, yeah? Born and bred. He's
say Bonner is a fraud.
Well, you know,
many Robin fans are listening.
but he is a Habonite. His Habin tendencies are still there within him. And basically, you chant yellows, but you don't chant anything. All right.
And you fart loads. That's his three. That's his top three things. He's always stuck by him. Yeah, maybe you're right. And I think, Casper, you've summarized that really, really well. Let's just wrap up the Morecambe game with a few stats. I've looked up the XG. Don't worry about it, Casper. Your favorite. Good. 2.6 for us, which is, you know, closer
that's
to
good.
Three.
That's good for good. Anyone who doesn't know.
And 0.6 for them. So, pretty convincing. Smith himself got at 1.2. And I'm trying to think.
I'm surprised it's as high as that.
Smith has got away with us not touching on that miss, by the way.
Just about to say, he really has got away with that miss, with that, because he does so well to even get, because he sort of misses his touch, right? And then he nods it past him. But when you watch the actual miss, it's not as tight an angle as Doug and Mark were mentioning in the commentary. I can tell you that for free.
Hey, look, he wasn't offside. So there's always that.
Do you know, I actually didn't, when it was happening, I actually didn't even, I was just sure
assumed
it
would be.
I didn't even like.
It's understandable. That.
Yeah. Okay, let's look ahead to October, because it's what we've been touched on a couple of times, but obviously that's the first away win. Very tough run of games coming up in October, ahead of the big one, obviously, to cap off the month. So, Derby at home, Ipswich away, Rovers away, Wednesday at home, Vale at home, Wickham away, Peterborough away. I mean, I'm already looking at that Vale at home game and thinking, God, that could be tasty in terms of, you know, a little bit of pressure on getting some points there. Rovers are not in a great position if you look at the league table. George, how important is it for you that we've already got 16 points on the board looking at that fixture list?
Yes, it's hugely important for numerous reasons. Like you say, October coming up is a tough month. It's a tough league. It's also 3 points more than where we were last year, I believe. Shout out if that's wrong. But yeah, like Saturday was just such a real accomplishment, you know, across the pitch. You know, being seventh after 10 games is so, so impressive. So I think we'll take encouragement for having more points compared to this stage last season. I think the start means that we could have a tough October and not worry too much, or not be looking over our shoulders as much, or be as filled with doubt. I think we had similar vibes last year at certain points where we kind of felt a little bit more assured going into tougher runs because of the points that we got on the board. As for the month itself, I would say that just the 3 points would be a poor return given who we're playing. You mentioned Vale at home. I think we need to be looking at Bristol Rovers away as a chance to get points. I'm going to say something which I'm pretty sure will get a reaction from the pair of you, given that you've been to Wickham so many times and seen us lose.
No way. No, we've lost that game already.
But Wickham aren't themselves this year. So I don't, you know, there's a small part of me that reckons something odd might happen in October. It's a very tough month, but nothing to fear based on the fact that we've got the points on the board, and we showed last year that we can carry momentum through to when we play those tougher games or those bigger teams. And yes, last year we got a hiding in quite a few of them, but we did also upset some people last year as well. So I feel like, I feel like we're not writing off Derby at home and Ipswich and Sheffield Wednesday and all these other sort of big teams based on the fact that last year we did do okay in some of those instances against them.
Yeah, for sure.
We're gonna lose all of them now, aren't we? Because I've just said that. But...
Brilliant. So that's 0 points from October incoming. Luke asks, with October being a tough month, how much momentum will this give us, the Morecambe win give us? And realistically, how many points should we be looking at? George said three isn't enough there. Stuart's asked, would three be okay? George says no. Casper, what do you think? And what are your sort of general hopes and expectations?
I think the only world where three is okay is if we win at London Road after losing all those games.
And that is the three, yeah.
That's the three. That's kind of the only world where I'm going to accept three as a thing. I mean, this time last season, roughly, we had a similar run. I think it was November We had a sort of extremely, what you would say is a pretty hard run of games. MK away, Rotherham away, Wigan at home, Sunderland at home, Cheltenham away, Rotherham at home again. And at the start of that run, we went away to Morecambe and won. So I'm hoping hoping it's a bit of an omens-y type thing that we've gone and won away at Morecambe again, sending us off into another hard run of games. And that actually, you know, we should be able, we have no reason based on what we did last November, you know, getting a draw against Wigan at home and then just narrowly losing some of those home games. We have no reason to really be worried, I don't think. I would like 6 or 7 points personally. And we, you know, we need to back ourselves. We are, our points per game puts us bang on target for ninth in League One this season. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how it plays out. It's just nice to have some big clubs come into the Abbey and or go into some big away games. It'd be great to go do something at Wickham. But I, again, I would sacrifice everything to go and do something at Peterborough, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you ask most United fans that, they would they'd have a very similar answer if that was what you were offering them. But next up is Derby at home. To help us preview the game, I had a chat with Chris from Steve Bloomer's Washing podcast, which has got to be one of the best podcast names that we've come up. So here's Chris. Well, hi, mate. Thanks very much for taking the time to join Under the Abbey Stand. Help us look ahead to next week's game, which, as far as I can tell, is the first since 1993. So long time in the making. Obviously, Derby have been in the news a lot recently with the appointment of Paul Warne. So maybe that's the best place to start. How are you feeling about the appointment and what's the sort of mood amongst the fan base?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. I think the mood is increasingly positive, I would say. I think the initial reaction was that it seemed quite a harsh decision on Liam Rossignol, who was interim manager at the time, having taken over when Wayne Rooney left for DC United in the summer, because Rossignol's record wasn't too bad. We were seventh at the moment, pretty strong at home, doing well in both cups, and Rossignol had to rebuild the squad entirely, basically from scratch. We were down to about four or five players in the summer for reasons that have been well documented. So he's brought a whole squad in. We are competitive, and most fans thought that Rossignol would maybe get a little bit longer, sort of maybe October, November, even until Christmas. But the owners did state in their statement, or the club said in the statement, that it was their plan all along to get a certain amount into the season and then evaluate things, see where we are, and then take it from there. So I think Rossignol was always on a probation, as it were, and David Clowes, Derby's new owner, was always looking to reevaluate things and go for a fresh start. I think that's the main aim. Bring in, you know, have a completely clean slate, because Rossignol was connected to Rooney and then even works under Philip Cocu, Rooney's predecessor, along with his staff. So I think as we're finding out so many new things in League One at Derby, I think it's time to embrace a manager who has been there and done that. And there aren't many people who have been there and done that more than Paul Warne, having got Rotherham up three times from this division. Yeah, cautiously optimistic. It'll be a big change in style, I think. We all know that Warne's Rotherham were relatively direct quite a lot of the time without being too unfair on them, whereas Rossignol and Rooney and Cocu before them tried to build from the back with a more possession-based passing game. Didn't always work. So I think fans are okay to accept a change. And well, hopefully the away goal drought will end for Derby, at least at the Abbey in our next game.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, we've got a pretty good record at giving managers a head start, so I'd feel fairly confident if I were you as well. It does feel like, you know, for a big club like Derby, and you know, in a division with its fair share of big clubs, in inverted commas, that if the aim is instant promotion back to the Championship, which I'm assuming it is, then Paul Warne is a pretty smart appointment. Is that where the fan base is at, in terms of, obviously it's been quite a tumultuous couple of years for Derby, is it just promotion at all costs, anything less is a failure this year?
If you'd have asked fans 6 months ago, or even in July, most would have just said a transition season in League One is okay, look, mid-table, we're genuinely happy just to have a club to support in the first place, because
yeah,
as yeah, I said, it was widely reported how close Derby came to going under, to not existing, to being taken out of the league. So, yeah, if you'd have asked us before, we'd have just said mid-table, that's fine. But time has ticked on. We've got the players to compete at this level. We've got players who, frankly, were amazed at playing for us at this level, like David McGoldrick and Conor Hourihan, players like that who are still internationals with real pedigree and experience. So I think now, with the experience we have, the start that we've had, which has been okay, we're seventh, not amazing, could be better, but now with Warren at the helm as well, it seems a clear message to me and to the fans from Clouds that we're going for it. We're going for it this season. And it's going to be difficult. We all know that because teams have turned us over already. You know, Lincoln have turned us over already. Like Plymouth beat us at Pride Park a couple of weeks ago after we were 2-0 up. Charlton have beaten us away this season. Plenty of teams have shown us what it's all about in this division. And there are some really strong teams who are like Derby, who were traditionally well-supported sides, who have really hit the ground running, like Ipswich, Portsmouth. Wednesday will be up there as well. So, yeah, we're under no illusions as a fan base that it's going to be an absolute, like, bun fight in this division, and it's going to be one hell of a challenge to get out of it the first attempt.
It really is, at the moment, a division of two divisions. And the thing is, though, that there are some tough little sides in there, and I'd put Cambridge in there. I'd put, you know, going places like Fleetwood. It's not an easy task, as I'm sure, but, you know, plenty of clubs have found out. You mentioned your start there, so you're seventh now, 1-4, loss 3. How, first of all, I mean, you sort of touched on it, how are you rating your start so far? But also, what do you think that Warren could bring to the side that might be lacking so far this year to sort of to push your way up the league?
Well, I mean, in terms of the start, home form couldn't have really been much better apart from that defeat to Plymouth. We've got 14 points, but 12 of them have come at home and only 2 of them have come away. So I think we've got the joint best home record in the league and like the 21st or 22nd worst away record. Haven't scored away from home yet this season. I think we're the only team in the EFL who haven't scored away from home yet, which is embarrassing, frankly. It's awful. So look, that's got to be Warren's absolute top priority, like getting us going away from home. It's not to say we haven't had chances away from home. I mean, I actually lost count. I think it's something like between 60 and 70 attempts on goal over four away games without scoring, which is clearly massively, massively frustrating. In terms of what Warren will bring, I think he might end up going 3-5-2 or 5-3-2, which will be a bit of a change for us. That was the setup that he used to employ at Rotherham. So wing backs, long diagonals into the box, trying to pick up second balls. I think that's, you know, like breaking at speed, matching teams physically. I think that will be a lot of the things he'll try to do, but it's whether we have the players to do it. Like, you know, Derby's midfield two, for example, of Conor Hourihan and young Max Bird are sort of diminutive ball-playing midfielders who like the ball to feet, and they don't really want to see... They won't want to play in a team where they're just having the ball launched over their heads into the box by fullbacks or wingers. So Warren has got a challenge. He's got to mould a squad that isn't his into playing his way, which is going to be difficult. I'm surprised we got him, really, because he had a long, long affinity with Rotherham, like played like nearly 300 games there. Managed there for 6 years, was really part of the furniture, got them up 3 times, won the Papa John's trophy. So I think he'll really be up for the challenge, but it'll be a different kind of challenge at Derby. I think it's not unfair to say that expectations will be higher, bigger crowds, like traditionally were played at a higher level in recent years at least. So I really hope that Warren hits the ground running. And hopefully he can transfer the magic that he generated in League One at Rotherham onto this Derby side.
Yeah, it's a bit of a it's a bit of a coup in a way, sort of, when you talk about it. Not that, you know, going from Rotherham to Derby on paper is, but you make a good point. He was building very well at Rotherham this year in the Championship. Just to clarify that away record, that's 23rd in the league for Derby. The only team worse is Cambridge United, so there you go.
Oh,
so
there you go.
So we feel your pain, but at least we have scored 3 goals away from home. And also, just interestingly, we have the exact same home record, so... Let's see what effect that has on Saturday. Let's talk about some specific players, and you've mentioned a couple. But what players should United fans be looking out for on Saturday when you visit the Abbey?
Well, it all depends on how Paul Warne sets things up, really. I mean, before he came, Nathaniel Mendes-Lang was having a really good start to the season. There were doubts about him coming in. I think he's had his off the field problems at clubs before Derby, but. He's still got that raw explosive pace, and he can skin most fullbacks in a foot race man to man. So he's chipped in with goals, scored a brilliant goal against Plymouth, scored goals elsewhere as well, and he's set a few up as well. Excuse me. So depending on where he's played, he'll be dangerous. I'm just wary that Warren might end up sticking him as a wing back, which just I don't think that will suit him at all. So yeah, Mendes-Lang will be hopefully a threat if he's played in the right place. Howarren, of course. I mean, he rescued 3 points for Derby in our last game at home to Wickham. We're 1-0 down, 15 minutes to go. He popped up with a screamer for the equaliser and then got on the end of a loose ball to get a brace, make it 2-1 and get Derby the points last time. So he's you know, most fans know he's got an absolute wand of a left peg. Set pieces, really dangerous. And teams seem to be giving him space around the box, which is just like suicide, basically, because he's proved in 2 games already the damage he can do in that position. So, yeah, Howarren, Mendes-Lang, and we're all hoping and praying that James Collins gets in the goals as well. Like, he's got a really good previous record at Cardiff and Luton, but has struggled for goals so far, only scored once, so he's in a bit of a drought. But hopefully, playing in a more direct style, maybe he can... he can get in amongst it as well.
Definitely not a bad 3 players to be looking out for, definitely, at least from a neutral's perspective. Well, just to finish off, let me push you for a prediction from Saturday's game, and feel free to be as cocky as you like. There's absolutely no bad feelings here.
Well, I've been doing that all season and it hasn't paid off. So I think without away day woes, I think we'll score. I'm going to stick my neck out and say Derby County will score an away goal, which is bold. And I think if we score and get a point, it's not a terrible result because our home form generally is really good. And I think if we're solid at home and pick up the odd point here or there away, that should be enough for playoff form just about. So I'll say score draw. I'll go Derby to score first and then Cambridge to get a heartbreaking late equaliser.
A scruffy late equaliser is the word you're looking for. Thanks very much, Chris.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks very much there to Chris. Quite an interesting interview in the sense that it's interesting to note that Derby's away form is the worst in the league. Only 2 points collected and 0 goals scored.
I worry for Bonner. He might hear that song again.
From the other end. I mean, it's all set up for that to be turned around on Saturday, isn't it? They do have a team with a lot of star quality throughout. George Caspel, what do you reckon? Good time to play them, maybe? I'll let either of you jump in on that.
Go on, George.
I just passed the buck there. Go on, George, you have that one.
I think it's probably a bad time to play them, given the whole change in manager and possible new manager bounce. I think it could be a dangerous one on Saturday, given that people might be wanting to play and impress Warren. So... yeah, I do always look at teams that have sort of bad stats and just think we'll end that. But I'll stay strong and loyal to what I was saying before we had that interview there where I said, oh, we've got nothing to fear against these teams. So, yeah, I think maybe given that we were so bad against Barnsley at home, there'll be a little bit of an extra motivation for the players to sort of up their game on Saturday at home and sort of remind everyone why we are in the league that we are and we're doing so well.
And also, I can definitely see the going back to a question from earlier, from Luke. It's like, I can definitely see that Morecambe win giving us a little bit of momentum and that little bit of confidence. A home game, like you say, nothing to fear. It could be really interesting to see how we set up with this Nibs-Lancaster debate that we talked about earlier. One thing we have to talk about with Warren going to Derby. Casper, are you worried at all about this this chat about the vacant seat up in South Yorkshire?
Doesn't feel good. I'm not massively worried because I feel like Bonner's kind of committed to this being, he has like a long-term vision on this being quite a big project. I think his boyhood club, the conditions are perfect for him right now at Cambridge and he's doing an amazing job. I'm just telling myself that as much as anything.
Yeah.
It's just one of those interesting things. Like, it's Cambridge United is uniquely set up for Mark Bonner to be successful. It's not why we exist, but it's just like the conditions are just perfect. And my concern for him is if he goes somewhere else with the sort of choppy, churny nature of football, it's all a bit mad, is that it, you know, I think he's fantastic. I think he'll do a great job wherever he goes, but it might not pan out that way. And he might end up in a weird situation. So my sort of, he deserves whatever he gets, frankly. Like, if he goes and gets a great job, a bit like when any, you know, if and when any of these players leave, I just want to see them make good moves that benefit their own careers and kind of work out for them. As long as it doesn't harm us directly, then that's great. I think the concern with Rotherham, I guess, is because it was Warren before, they're quite good. They're well acquainted, right? They're like good mates, him and Bonner. And I think that is the main reason that this is a little bit more, you know, concerning than maybe some of the other times you see him appear on the odds lists. You know, that's the only thing that is kind of just lingering around. I'm ready for them to appoint someone, basically, Rotherham.
Yeah.
Also, I'm ready for them to crack on.
Also, Rotherham have this track record of sticking with Warren, even though they've been relegated under him. So maybe that whole, oh, Bonner goes somewhere, doesn't work out, and they maybe get relegated and he loses his job quite quickly. Maybe that, in his mind, is less of a thing with Rotherham because they've got this track record very recently of sticking with their manager and buying into a vision and a setup. And
it doesn't help that that Rotherham fans sort of unanimously seem to agree that we were the best team they played at their place last year, even though I think we lost 2-3-1 that day. But I do remember I remember that our goal was incredible, right? That was that.
A certain Houlihan ran the show there.
Yeah. They clapped him off, didn't they?
Yeah,
their fans, they did. Like, he got like a standing ovation from their fans. Which
they're all going to that Vets team on Sunday to watch him play. That's how much they love
him. But there was a horrible moment on like Thursday when there was, you know, a bit of chat in groups and stuff, and there was a bit of worry, and like, you know, he was like 4-1 on the odds list or something to take over. And then Waddick did the press conference and it was like, oh no.
Tom Walker sent a message in the group chat that just said
Bonner gone. Yeah.
It just said Bonner to Rotherham. I was like, is that like brilliant. I was like scanning Twitter like
Yeah.
And I was like, is that anyway, a thing?
Yeah. Anyway, I think I have enough faith, but let's leave that there, shall we? Just in case. To end the pod, we've got a really exciting new feature, which we're going to be included every few weeks, from our roving reporter, Adam Tarasevich. He's going to be keeping an eye on the fortunes of the Cambridge United women's team for the pod. Here's his report on the opening 5 games of the season and the summer transfer business before that.
Hello there, UTAS. I'm really excited to be able to talk about the women's team for the first time on the pod. I'm sure there are some people out there who maybe just don't know much about our women's team but would like to know more, so I hope to be able to give a resume of the opening 5 games of the Division 1 South East. United are sitting in 6th, about as mid-table as they come, with a decent but unremarkable 1 win, 2 draws and 2 losses in their first 5. It should be noted though that those 2 losses have come against the top 2, Hashtag and Norwich, who have not yet lost a game. United over the summer made some really good additions. 5th tier champions Northampton gave us Francesca Partridge, a sort of tall, rangy striker. She's looked really comfortable at the next level so far. Same can be said of Sammy Edgar, a midfield anchor. She's come in from lower league as well, Royston. She's looked one of the better passers in the team alongside some really good defensive attributes. Recently, United added Abby Jackson. Just last weekend from Ipswich Town. She's centre-back, hasn't played yet, but centre-back has been a position Cambridge have perhaps needed a bit more depth. And then the standout signing has got to be Sarah Wiltshire. She's an all-round attacking player. She can play a bit more withdrawn in the midfield or up top, which is where she's mostly played for United in the front three. She brings the experience and technical ability to the team. She's played at Spurs, Watford. She played at Yeovil, scored their first ever WSL goal, and has also been an international for Wales. So in the season, United started with a loss against Norwich at the Abbey. It was in front of a record attendance for the women's team, which was a really great way to start the year. Partridge also started the year well, scoring a beautiful finish from outside the area. There's no XG data available for this league, so you just have to go on what the eye test looks like. I know UTAS aren't always particularly big on the XG, but it was a great way to attract young fans, I think, scoring a goal like that as the first goal of the season. United looked really good in the first half, actually, but ended up conceding before the end of it. And then in the second half, they fell behind and never really looked like coming back into the game. Norwich ended up scoring a third and a fourth. Cambridge struggled to deal with their physical defenders and their physical attackers. And it ended up being a bit harsh on Cambridge, 4-1, but it probably won't age too badly given Norwich's position. I think the main worry, though, is going to be that there was some real frustration late on. Cambridge were resorting to long shots from well outside the area instead of carving out decent workable chances. I'm sure Darren Marjoram will look to improve on that for the rest of the season. Hashtag United beat Cambridge in the most recent league game. Pretty comprehensive 5-0 win. There's no real surprise that Hashtag are top of the league with a plus 20 goal difference after five games. I'm pretty sure they'll be aiming for promotion this year. And I also think we're probably not going to be the only team that loses by that scoreline to them. Two draws very quickly. Ashford Town, 3-3. Alicia Stoiko down. Scored two late on. Cambridge were 3-1 behind in that game, but Stoiko Down, who's been my favourite player since joining last season, she's a midfielder with creativity, probably the most consistent forward passer in the midfield, and clearly has a good free kick as she scored her second from a set piece to equalise. And then the other draw was 1-1 against QPR. United will probably be disappointed to have only drawn, as they were better in the first half. Sammy Edgar had a really good game, showing good defensive positioning, popping up all over the place in just in front of the back four to cut out opposition attacks. And she also got her first goal after some pretty slapdash QPR defending from a United corner. The win came in the derby with Cambridge City. First win of the season for Darren Marjoram's side. Two goals from Sarah Wiltshire makes her the joint top scorer with Stoiko Down at the moment. City finished above United on goal difference last season, so the fact that United have won the derby and City have only picked up one win in their first four means that there's hope that we can finish above them this season. In terms of the performances, some really good pressing on display at times. It's been nice to notice that game to game. One reason I think that we were unlucky to only draw with QPR is that in the first half, there were times when QPR could barely get out of their own half. Cambridge looked alert to your QPR's build-up play and won the ball back high up the pitch quite a few times, but were just unable to turn it into real goal-scoring chances. My player of the season so far is Sammy Edgar, who put in a really good performance in that game as well. She plays with so much aggression, always popping up to break up attacks. And as I said, pleasant surprise that she's also a good passer. She, along with Partridge, have looked genuinely ecstatic to get their first United goals, which from a fan perspective is just really nice to see. However, there have been problems as well. At times, the build-up play has looked quite rushed. For the quality that the front three has of Fox, Partridge and Wiltshire, if the ball can be got into them effectively and consistently, they could really be a very dangerous attack, but it's happened too rarely so far. Sometimes the ball is just hoofed long, long balls that aren't particularly accurate. Midfield is sometimes bypassed, and as I've said, there are some pretty good passes in that midfield. And I think that's played into another problem of United's is that when they tire in the second half, which is perhaps to be has to be acknowledged, they're not professional footballers. So in this game, they have to be. It has to be acknowledged more that they will tire later on. But United have not been burying chances when they've got them. That's probably why they only drew with QPR. Is the chances due to perhaps poor build-up play have just not been taken earlier in games to kill them off. But that is pretty much it. I don't think there are too many other huge glaring problems. United will have played again by the time this pod comes out. They're playing Gillingham in the Cup in St. Neots, but they're available to watch again next weekend on the 2nd of October when they'll be home to Chesham United.
Thanks very much to Adam for that. A brilliant summary of the start of the season. We're really excited to be able to feature coverage of the women's team on the pod going forward. It's been far too long in the making for us. Do think about heading down to that game against Chesham United next Sunday, 2nd of November, down at St. Neots Town, to show your support if you can. And do give Adam a follow on Twitter. He's at Tarasevic. Adam, I'll spell that for you. At Tarasevicadam. And we'll have him back for an update in the next couple of weeks.
Well done on getting his name right there, mate. That was impressive.
Yeah, mate, yeah. Don't worry about it. I've been practicing. She's listening.
This is why we're recording on Monday, as you've spent all Sunday just practicing how to say his name.
Too hungover yesterday to be able to say it. No, thank you very much, Adam. That's great. And looking forward to getting some more updates in the next couple of weeks. And all that's left for me is to say goodbye. Jord, thank you very much for joining the pod again, mate.
Thank you for having me, Julian. Thanks for listening, everyone. Sorry to the Monday morning gym goers who like to have the pod there.
I'm thinking specifically of Liam Camp, who always says that we are
the
first thing that he listens to on a Monday. And Caspar, thank you very much as well, mate.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. God help Liam Camp if that's the first thing he does every week.
God save Liam Camp.